From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo's health commissioner is grilled by lawmakers over the state's handling of water contamination in Hoosick Falls. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on early voting. And 55 colleges and universities across the state sign the Reforming the Energy Vision Campus Challenge. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo's health commissioner faced an intense grilling from lawmakers this week at a joint hearing on how the administration handled water contamination in the eastern New York village of Hoosick Falls. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt was there and filed this report.
Governor Cuomo's administration has been accused of failing for 18 months to inform residents in Hoosick Falls that their water might be unsafe to drink because of contamination with the toxic chemical PFOA. It's used in Teflon manufacturing, among other uses, and linked to cancer. Legislators, both Democrats and Republicans, intently questioned Health Department Commissioner Howard Zucker and other Cuomo administration officials. They wanted to find out, essentially, what did they know about the PFOA contamination and when did they know it? Commissioner Zucker, testifying under oath, blamed the federal EPA for any mix-up, saying they kept making sudden changes and were inconsistent on their guidelines for safe levels of PFOA for human consumption.
There was inconsistencies back from November 2015.
But Senator John DeFrancisco says it's the health department that needs to explain an even bigger inconsistency. Why, he asked, did the department in December of 2015 distribute a fact sheet to village residents saying the water was safe to drink after federal EPA Administrator Judith Enck had warned residents in a town meeting not to drink the water?
But what I can't understand for the life of me, when you talk about this confusion, the EPA came out with a do not drink the water in December of 2015, and you, Department of Health, in their fact sheet said it's okay to drink. After, I don't care what the EPA said, after you've already felt it's so important that you're getting water there, you're bringing a filtration system, you're trying to protect the residents. Tell me, how did the EPA fool you into saying do not drink the water?
Commissioner Zucker answered,
when the EPA put out their information to say, do not drink the water, the next day we complied with that in December.
But DeFrancisco asked, why then did DOH not change the fact sheet telling residents that the water was okay?
Doctor, I don't think there's anybody that can read the English language that can confuse the edict or the determination by the health department that the water is not dangerous to people in that fact sheet. I mean, is there any other interpretation, no matter how confusing this incompetent EPA is? What other conclusion can you draw from that?
Zucker finally conceded the health department could have done better.
That fact sheet probably could have been clearer for the public.
Hundreds of residents in Hoosick Falls have been found through tests conducted this year by the health department to have very high levels of PFOA in their blood. Dr. Zucker and other health department officials, in addition to blaming the EPA for confusion, also pointed the finger at the polluter, St. Joe Bain. They were invited to testify but declined. The company may be subpoenaed to appear at a later hearing. The health officials also cast doubt on the actions of village leaders and even blame landlords for not informing tenants about the potential safety of the water. That led Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin, who represents Hoosick Falls, to finally explode.
And there's a nice game going going on between you're going to blame the EPA and then push responsibility onto the village, which is a small village, and meanwhile the DOH just continues to say we didn't do anything wrong. So it's distressing to hear that, and it's going to make for a fairly long day and some pretty intense questioning, because you can see I don't think that the members up here are quite buying the fact that the DOH holds no responsibility in this.
While the hearings continued, the EPA declared Hoosick Falls a federal Superfund site. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week, more hearings on the PFOA contamination specific to Hoosick Falls, but other contamination, including PFOS and lead and other contaminants in water. And this week, legislators, both Democrats and Republicans, intensely questioned Health Department Commissioner Howard Zucker and other administration officials to find out what they knew about the PFOA contamination in Hoosick Falls and when. Again, Zucker blamed the Federal Environmental Protection Agency for any mix-up, saying they kept making sudden changes on their guidelines for safe levels of PFOA for human consumption, and the state health department struggled to keep up. But Senator John DeFrancisco, a Republican from the Syracuse area, says the health department needs to explain an even bigger inconsistency, Alan. Why, he asked, did the department in December of 2015 distribute a fact sheet to village residents saying the water was safe to drink, after federal EPA Administrator Judith Enck warned residents in a town meeting not to drink the water?
David, this is really bad stuff. I'll tell you why. Look, our water is our most precious resource. It's right up there on the very top. If you're looking at critical components of our environment, our fresh water, our drinking water is right up there. So now we have this terrible sight of Zucker being called to task, as well as the federal government. And Zucker pointing to the feds and saying, you know, it's not our fault, it's their fault. It is so childlike. It is so disturbing. I can't believe it. When the real issue here is making sure that the drinking water in the state of New York, and everywhere else, by the way, is pure, so that our kids can drink it without drinking lead, without drinking contaminants that are used to coat frying pans, which we know are cancer-causing. And yet, the best that the Cuomo administration seems to be able to do is to point at the feds and to say it's their fault. Senator DeFrancisco is exactly right in his pointing to the fact that there was bad information given out by the state. The state can say all they want that the feds are responsible, but the feds have a track record here, and they have shown that they were warning us. So I can just say that this is a very bad thing. The Cuomo administration has come back and said, okay, what we need to do is make sure that in our schools we have clean water. Exactly. But to fight a rear guard action by blaming the federal government when they didn't do what they're being accused of is unsightly and wrong.
Meanwhile, the state GOP chairman, Ed Cox, perhaps not surprisingly, slammed Governor Cuomo's response to the Hoosick Falls crisis, saying it's his Flint, Michigan.
Well, it could be. Look, in each of these cases, Flint, Michigan, New York State, Hoosick Falls, the bottom line is that it went on far too long and that whoever is around politically is going to get blamed for it. Governor Cuomo is not the health commissioner, but the health commissioner works for Governor Cuomo. Cox is a political opponent. He's trying his best to get a Republican elected in the next gubernatorial election. He's putting this out, and it is not pretty. But on the other hand, he is doing his job in a political contest. I myself think it's unsightly because obviously the Republicans have enough to answer for, because for all of these years, look, George Pataki was governor for a long, long time, for 12 years. Do you really think that none of this was happening on his watch? Come on, you know, what we have to do here is figure out a way so that we clean it all up and it doesn't happen again. And that is going to be a massive job.
Whether or not to keep a job, Preet Bharara and the presidential election coming up, and whether he'll be reappointed as U.S. attorney in New York. You had a discussion with NYPIRG, that's the New York Public Interest Research Group's executive director, Blair Horner, this week about that very topic.
Well, Blair Horner made it clear that he couldn't quite understand why it was that Chuck Schumer, who put Bharara there in the first place, he was puzzled at Chuck Schumer saying it's too early to decide. Now, look, We know that Barrara is very active. We hear rumors, I don't know if they're true, that Barrara is looking at the Clinton Foundation. If that is true, and that's a big if, but if that is true, I can understand that Hillary Clinton says it's too early to decide whether he should stay. This guy is a hero. Barrara is a guy who has done everything in his power to clean things up around here. And there should be no hesitancy on Mrs. Clinton's part. There should be no hesitancy on Chuck Schumer's part or of anybody else to say, hey, we finally got somebody who really means it, who's not just making noise, and he has to be reappointed. And there is no good reason in the world that Mrs. Clinton shouldn't have said, the guy's a hero, we're keeping him. It would have helped her. But instead, she caused an awful lot of doubt by raising her eyebrows about this.
You also spoke with Blair Horner about the concept of early voting.
Well, look, Democrats always want to make it easier for people to vote. If you're flipping hamburgers for, you know, $10 an hour or $9 an hour, you can't afford to go away. So it makes great sense to be able to say, we can vote by mail. We can. Now, the Republicans, for their part, are almost universal in opposing all of these ways to make it easier to vote. And it is not a good-looking thing. It doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me. You know, the idea is, if you're going to be in a democracy, you want to have people be able to vote. The Republicans will come back and they'll say the potential is for fraud. And yet, all of the investigations that have taken place so far show almost no fraud at all. So this is a red herring if there ever was one. Sooner or later, we're going to have it. We're going to have voting by mail. We're going to probably voting by computer. We'll vote, and more people will be given a voice. And then that will change the way in which elections come out.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Democratic New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney was in Orange County late last week, urging for the passage of nearly $2 billion in emergency funding to combat the Zika virus. County officials joined him at Orange County Community College in Newburgh, supporting his call. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn was there.
Congressman Maloney joined local health experts at SUNY Orange, which is conducting mosquito surveillance for Orange County, to call for congressional passage of $1.9 billion in emergency funding to combat Zika. The Zika virus is currently present in Latin America, the Pacific Islands, and as of July, the United States, where the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported the first locally transmitted cases in two sections of Miami. And in August, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services declared a public health emergency in Puerto Rico. Here's Maloney.
There is not a Democratic or Republican way to fight a public health emergency. We need to fully fund this research. We need to do it in time to do us some good. Zika is a real and growing threat. It is here, and it is affecting our fellow citizens. And we need to do something about it. And we need to come together across layers of government and across party lines and get the politics out of it and listen to the experts and fight this virus in time to do us some good.
He says Congress's return to session September 6th offers another chance to pass the $1.9 billion in emergency funds requested by the Obama administration in February to address the potential spread of Zika in the U.S.
A colleague of mine in the House of Representatives said to me that he and his wife went to Miami and they're planning on having a baby, and their doctor told them then they should wait to have a pregnancy for at least a year because they traveled to Miami. That's nuts. All of us should not have to worry about where we travel in the United States when we're planning a family, when we can combat this through good research and through funding the scientists who are telling us they need certain resources to do this work.
Orange County Health Commissioner Dr. Eli Avila says the county has 7 documented travel-related cases of Zika.
Let us all keep in mind that when it relates to combating Zika virus, unborn lives matter, Puerto Rican lives matter, all lives matter. If we're to have a secure future.
He says while information concerning the potential devastating effect Zika has on pregnant women and the developing fetus is well known, there is new information.
What has not gotten much attention is the mounting evidence coming from the Rockefeller University and La Jolla Institute for Allergy and Immunology, which suggests that certain adult brain cells may be especially vulnerable to infection by the Zika virus as well. Among these are populations of cells that serve to replace lost or damaged neurons throughout adulthood and are also thought to be critical to learning and memory.
Maloney points to Health and Human Services having informed Congress in August that it had to redirect an additional $81 million already appropriated for other purposes, including for other public health emergencies such as Ebola, to combat the Zika virus, including working on developing a vaccine.
I don't think we want to rob Peter to pay Paul when we're choosing between Ebola and Zika. These are both serious viruses, and we need to understand them. We should not be stumbling virus to virus, crisis to crisis.
Republican Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse also stood at the SUNY Newburgh campus supporting Maloney's call.
What we have here is we have a lot of concerned residents in Orange County that have called us and said, I'm pregnant, what do I do? Should I go out? I'm afraid to get bitten by mosquitoes or this, that, the other thing. It's a serious concern for this country.
Again, Maloney.
And those of us who live in areas that have not yet had native cases of Zika, where we do not yet have mosquitoes infected with the Zika virus, we should be particularly interested in doing this research now before we're confronting this problem. This is a classic stitch in time saves nine problem.
In an op-ed piece in USA Today in August entitled Drop the Politics, Put Health First, Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan called the Democrats obstructionists. He blamed Senate Democrats for derailing an agreed-upon compromise, a $1.1 billion bill with new and existing funds in an election year. He also criticized the White House for turning a blind eye. The CDC reports 2,722 Zika cases in the U.S. Of these, 35 are locally acquired. Meanwhile, the New York State Department of Health reports 701 cases to date, all travel-related.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
55 colleges and universities across New York State have signed REV, the Reforming the Energy Vision Campus Challenge. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
Schools participating in the REV Campus Challenge are pledging to improve campus efficiency, reduce carbon emissions, and engage folks in their local communities. Patrick Oshai is the Director of Market Development at NYSERDA, the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority.
One of the key principles in the REV Campus Challenge is student leadership and student involvement. We're looking at that in a couple of ways. We're encouraging campuses to develop sustainability curriculum, clean energy curriculum, and actually encourage students to look at these avenues for careers in the future. We're also looking to bring to them awareness and understanding of how their behaviors and their choices impact New York's clean energy future. So they become a good model whether they take on clean energy professionally or they take it on as a consumer and making investment choices for themselves in the future.
There are 12 colleges signed up in New York City, 8 in central New York, 7 each in western New York and the Mid-Hudson region, 4 each in the Southern Tier, Capital Region, North Country, and Mohawk Valley regions, 3 in the Finger Lakes, and 2 on Long Island. REV supports New York's recent adoption of the Clean Energy Standard and Governor Andrew Cuomo's aggressive mandate to achieve 50% renewables by 2030. Susan Powers is the interim director of the Institute for Sustainable Environment at Clarkson University.
Most people think of that in terms of more solar panels and wind turbines, but it's the whole transmission and distribution system and smart grid. It's the reducing our loads and transferring them across the hours of the day to make that system work better. It's a behavioral change to encourage people to conserve, and it's policies to enable all of that. And so at Clarkson, we're looking both in terms of what we are teaching our students and what research we're doing to improve those activities and what we're doing in our own operations for that whole system, which I think is really, really important to connect all those dots. You can't just have more solar panels without all the rest and really achieve clean energy.
In its first year of operation, REV Campus Challenge has already reached more than 30% of its goal to enroll 150 colleges in the state.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Milk production in the region is up as the payments farmers are receiving have dropped to unprofitable levels. Meanwhile, the federal program intended to buffer the low points is coming under increasing criticism. This is occurring at the same time an export market that might aid the dairy industry could be blocked. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The National Agricultural Statistics Service's latest report show that milk production in New York in June was up 4.2% over the previous year. In Vermont, production rose 1.3% during the same time frame. But in both states, the average price received by farmers for their product dropped. Vermont farmers got $16 per hundredweight in May, 40 cents less than in April, and down $2 from May a year ago. In New York, dairy farmers are getting $1.80 less per hundredweight than they were paid a year ago. AgriMark economist Bob Wellington says the safety net that the federal government created in the latest farm bill, the Margin Protection Program, or MPP, isn't working as an adequate buffer.
Farmers signed up for it last year when the prices first started collapsing, and hardly any farmer got any money despite spending, I think, $75 million farmers spent on premiums, and I think they gave out less than $1 million in payments last year. But the trigger price wouldn't trigger in for most farmers. It was like right on the edge. And so farmers looking at 2016, most of them didn't buy up coverage. Those that did get a payment during the springtime. And the payment covered the cost of the premiums, but not much more than that. And not all farmers qualified for it anyway. So it hasn't been a good program overall for farmers.
Sam Dyer operates a small dairy farm in Clinton County, New York. He calls the Margin Protection Program a farce.
I don't know of any farmers in Clinton County, or for that matter, in any county in New York State that have collected from the program at all. I think before we talk about a program, we need a price. You know, 2 years ago, or a little over 2 years ago, we were getting $28 a hundred per mil. Last month, we received $15.50 at the farm. You got to take another 50 cents out for hauling, so you're down to $15 a hundred. I cannot produce milk and make a living at $15. Maybe at 18 or 19. 21 and 22, we would be good. But at $15 a hundred, I don't think anybody can make a living at that price.
Another issue of critical concern to the region's dairy industry is a move by Canada to implement a national ingredients strategy. It would bar dairy imports from the U.S. Senator Charles Schumer is concerned because two plants in New York export milk protein concentrates and ultra-filtered milk. He is asking U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack to determine if the move by Canada is in alignment with trade agreements. Northeast Dairy Farmers Cooperative's senior dairy policy advisor Robert Gray says it's a huge issue across the region.
We've got two plants in New York that have developed a very good market in Canada for ultra-filtered high-protein milk. It used to be called MPCs, milk protein concentrates, but there were very few plants that made this kind of product. Now we have them, and these two plants have developed a very good market into Canada. And if we lose those sales into Canada, that milk will come back on the domestic market, and it will lower prices for all dairy farmers, not just New York, but for the whole Northeast even further, because it's putting extra milk on the market.
A decision is expected by November 1st regarding Canada's national ingredients strategy.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1637, or just listen or podcast on the web, wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org.